Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this evening for the next hour, they're going to be the views of a fellow named Ernie Gallo. You haven't heard Ernie with us before, but Ernie has a very important story to tell. In fact, probably one of the most important stories you've ever heard. It was back in 1967, during the 1967 war, that was 41 years ago, when an intelligence gathering ship called the USS Liberty was sent off the coast of northern Egypt and southern Sinai Desert to gather intelligence information during the conflict between Israel and its neighbors. And, of course, well, I'm going to let Ernie tell the story because he lived through it. It's one of the most harrowing stories you've ever heard. And many of the people who were on the USS Liberty still have nightmares about what happened that day. Ernie Gallo, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for allowing me to be on.
Well, it's my privilege to have you with us, Ernie. And you go ahead and tell the story. Tell our listeners who you are, and then, of course, what happened that fateful day.
Well, I'm retired and living in Florida. And at the time, I was a communications technician, maintenance branch. And my job was to repair the intercept equipment on board the ship and crypto devices. And June 8th, 1967, we were sailing towards the Sinai Peninsula, positioning ourselves in a sort of a lazy eight configuration to sail up and down the coast of the Sinai. It was a beautiful sunny day, light breeze. We were flying our flag, as all naval vessels, United States naval vessels do. We were plainly marked with the traditional U.S. Navy symbols as far as our identification letters on our hull, GTR-5, and very large letters on our stern that said USS Liberty. We were a very odd-looking ship. The Liberty was a converted World War II cargo ship, Victory Hill cargo ship, that was reconfigured and set up so that we could perform intercept operations. We worked indirectly for the National Security Agency. Our mission, which was very, very unusual, that we would be sent into this hostile area. Normally, our leisure sail was 4 months up and down the west coast of Africa, but this time we were sent into the Mediterranean because we were told that the hostilities was about to break out between the Arabs and the Israelis.
All right, fine. So you're there, it's an American ship, a naval ship, heading towards the coast of the Sinai. The 67 war is underway at the time, and when we get back, Ernie will give us a lot more information about what happened that day, a day that had the American people understood the significance of what happened. Why, of course, the whole world would have changed at that time. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, Ernie. Tell the story.
Well, the our captain was very concerned about the events that might take place. So he drilled and drilled us to make sure that if something happened, that we would all go to our general quarter stations quickly. And that day was no different from any others in that we practiced the general quarters drill. And
now, tell us what a general quarters drill is, because I don't think many of our listeners would know that. That's a naval term, but what did it mean? Certainly, does that mean you're getting ready for an attack, or what?
Yes, the possibility of attack. That there were certain jobs that normally one would not normally do. That the effort would be for the defense of the ship or whatever.
Well, of course, you really didn't have any weapons on board, but you have a couple of 50 millimeter machine guns. Did you have any other means of defense?
No, we had 450 caliber machine guns positions. These were formal mount positions, but they were for repel border purposes. There's no way that we could defend ourselves against any kind of aggressive destroyer or motor torpedo boat or jet planes or whatever. That wasn't their purpose. We were not an aggressive looking ship, but we were not we did not have any torpedo launchers or gun emplacements other than those 450 caliber machine guns. And while we were a military vessel, we were not designed as a combatant. This was an auxiliary ship. The general quarters was to pre-position people so that each one of the compartments had someone there to report to the captain the status of that room or that area to ensure that the all the boilers were working properly and the ship had power and could perform whatever operations he requested so that everybody with the right skills were in position. What I'm trying to say here is that in general
Hold that thought, Ernie. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ernie is simply saying that the captain of their ship, the USS Liberty, was very, very concerned that something might happen, and so he certainly had them constantly drilling at general quarters. The ship only was armed with 450 caliber machine guns, nothing else to defend themselves with, but the captain was aware that they were going into a potentially hostile area where war was going to be taking place, and he wanted to be sure that the men knew exactly what to do should anything happen so they could defend the ship and defend themselves. So please continue the story, Ernie Gallo.
The captain was so concerned that he had sent a message to London where the naval and admiralty hung their hat, and he asked them for a destroyer escort to protect us in case something did happen. And Vice Admiral Martin, under Admiral McCain, sent a message back and said that the ship was flying the American ensign, and we would be in international waters, and no one would dare attack us.
Now, of course, this is the Admiral McCain, who is the father of the current presidential candidate, John McCain. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, yeah. So go ahead. So Admiral McCain declined or refused a request for a destroyer escort to protect the USS Liberty as it moved into what was obviously hostile waters. So go ahead.
The irony here is that I believe the attitude was that the Soviets, and they were our arch enemy, wouldn't dare attack an American ship, and I believe that to be true. And that's where their confidence came from. You have to go back to those times. You know, we were fighting the Cold War, and the Soviets were constantly in our face no matter what we did, even on the high seas. But they wouldn't dare attack their ship. And the Egyptians may not have been a satellite at that time, but I don't feel that even the Egyptians would. I mean, they didn't have the auspice, the naval manpower to do that anyway. Anyway, we were doing our our job, our mission, and after lunch,
What was the date exactly?
I'm sorry?
What, do you remember the exact date? This what happened at, what was the date?
June 8, 1967.
June 8, 1967. Go right ahead.
we just finished lunch and we were going back into our routines, and the captain came on they call it the 1MC, the annunciator for the ship. And he indicated he was pleased with the general quarters drill, and he wanted to impress on us the seriousness of our predicament. And you could see some gunfire in the distance on the shore. And he said, you know, if you come topside, you could see see the gunfire. And so he wanted us all prepared and on our toes to make sure that we. Did whatever we had to do to save the ship if anything should happen. And with that, I decided that I would do that and grab a cigarette and a Coke and go see this event that was taking place on shore. And no sooner did I get my Coke that there was a hellacious sound topside. And right after that, our general quarters alarm went off, and I immediately went to my general quarters station, which was within our communication technician spaces, which was about amidships below decks. The metal-to-metal carnage that was taking place was horrific.
No, no, because what you're talking now is suddenly your ship is under attack.
Yes, there were Mirage jets that the Israelis were flying, and they were unmarked, and they took out the machine gun positions immediately, then started working on the bridge, putting rockets through the portholes, and shooting up our antennas as fast as they could to make sure that we could not get a message off, and jamming our frequencies in so doing. But miraculously, we had one enterprising ET. His name was Terry Halbutier, rigged up a transmission line to the only transmitting antenna we had left. And they did manage to get a mayday off to the 6th Fleet.
So apparently the Israeli flyers knew exactly what they were doing, and of course they wanted to prevent you from getting a message off, letting anybody in the world know what was going on. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I failed to mention that earlier in the morning we had logged 12 Israeli reconnaissance flights where they had overflown the ship and came very close at different times. And as a matter of fact, on one pass, I was topside, and it was an Israeli pilot, and I could see the pilot's face, and I waved to him, and he waved back, and we felt very comfortable. In fact, some of the guys who weren't working actually were sunbathing. We felt so relaxed that that our ally was keeping an eye on us, and you know, the state seemed to care.
Well, of course, when you came under attack, the planes were unmarked, so you weren't sure who was actually attacking you, where you, you know, when the attack came.
That's exactly right. The message, the May Day that we sent to the Sixth Fleet, was simply that we were under attack and we did not know who. So the message that the Sixth Fleet reacted to, I mean, it could have been the Soviets, it could have been anybody. So I know Captain Tully on the Saratoga immediately launched planes to come to our aid, and he contacted the USS America, and he asked for them to do the same.
What was USS America? Was a aircraft carrier as well?
Yes, this was a second aircraft carrier.
All right, fine. And Tully was on the USS Saratoga?
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, Admiral Geis was on the America, and he was in charge of the air wings. He gave orders to launch planes from the America, but there was a problem with the way the planes were armed or whatever, and he also sent a message to Washington, in Criticom, a message which went right to the White House, to tell them that they were launching planes to come to our aid. And at that time, we learned this later. I learned this 20 years later after this happened, and I'll explain why. But anyway, Bob McNamara, he was the
Secretary of Defense, right?
Secretary of Defense. Bob McNamara recalled the planes and had them return the planes to the decks.
In other words, the Secretary of Defense ordered the planes to return so there would be no defense for the USS Liberty. Why would the Secretary of Defense of the United States call those planes back? Didn't he want to save the Liberty?
Well, the best is yet to come.
All right, fine. You go ahead with the story.
I can't answer that, but the next thing that happened was, of course, we continued to every chance we had to transmit our May Day in between the times that the Israelis were jamming our frequencies. They could hear that we were in dire straits. And Admiral Geis then challenged the order because, once again, it could have been the Soviets who were attacking the ship, and he wanted to come to our aid. We were a defenseless ship. So he gave orders to configure planes that were conventionally armed, and planes were launched from the America and from the Saratoga.
A second time. Right.
And he radioed back to Washington what he was doing and indicating that he was challenging the order, but making sure that they knew that none of the planes were carrying nuclear weapons, and that they're conventionally armed. And this time, President Johnson actually came online, and he told them to return the planes to their decks. And he said, and I'm not sure if it's going to be word, but I'm going to be able to quote this word for word, something to the effect that, I don't care if that ship sinks, I will not embarrass my ally. Like as I said, we never told anyone we didn't know who was attacking us. Then shortly thereafter, after the
but because Lyndon Johnson knew who was attacking you, even though you didn't know who was attacking you. Apparently. And of course, this was the pattern of betrayal by the President of the United States on the men under his direct command, the men of the USS Liberty, who were left there obviously to die. Because, you know, so continue with the story.
Shortly after that, there was a pause, and the next thing we knew, that there was three motor torpedo boats, and now they were flying, we could see the Israeli flag.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Ernie Gallo, who was on the USS Liberty the day it was attacked and betrayed. Go right ahead, Ernie.
the the
torpedo boats
were armed with 30 millimeter cannon and 50 caliber and torpedoes, and they continually came and they strafed the ship continuously, and each of them dropped their torpedoes in the water. Now, each motor torpedo boat carried two torpedoes, and they managed to put five in the water. And finally, one of the our captain did a terrific job, maneuvering the ship to avoid the torpedoes. These were dumb torpedoes, nothing like today's torpedoes that actually home in on the ships. These torpedoes, you just simply drop them in the water, and they just go straight to wherever you point them. And our captain did manage to avoid four of them, but unfortunately, we did take the fifth torpedo, and that torpedo killed 25 of the 34 that were killed. Miraculously, we didn't sink. We all thought that that was going to happen.
No, of course you had actually some life rafts you put in the water, and they were actually machine gunned and sunk by the torpedo boats, weren't they?
Yes. Lieutenant Lloyd Painter saw that, and testified to that at the Navy Court of Inquiry that happened. So that we did not have any life rafts or boats or anything. If we had to abandon ship, it would have been just a life vest that we would be wearing. There were 173 wounded, the loss of life would have been a lot worse.
How many men were there on board the ship?
We had a complement about 293.
So basically you had 293 men, 34 killed, 170 wounded?
173 wounded.
All right, so you're talking about 207 men dead or wounded. Go ahead.
Yeah. Two-thirds of our crew then were taken out. And to give you an idea how vicious the attack was, they counted over 820 penetrations in the bulkheads and the hull of the ship. And I just want to make a point about the torpedo. Of all naval accounts, that torpedo should have caused the ship to sink. We should have broken apart and sunk. But miraculously, the torpedo hit a spot on the ship. First of all, there was a brace there to absorb some of the power of the explosion. But it was in the area of the CT spaces. The CT spaces, the intercept spaces, were a denied area to the rest of the ship, which means that an area where...
Hold that thought. Certainly we're going to bring our other stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Ernie is telling us what happened. Suddenly there are three torpedo boats, Israeli torpedo boats. Now they're flying the Israeli flag. And of course, they machine gun people on board the ship. The Liberty had dropped some life rafts over side. So if they had to abandon ship, they could have. But all of the life rafts were actually machine gunned and sunk. And then, of course, they began releasing torpedoes. They released five torpedoes. Four of them missed the ship because the captain suddenly changed course and was able to avoid them. But the fifth actually hit the ship and should have sunk it. Now, remember, there are about 290 people on board. There are 34 dead. There are, 193 who are wounded. 193, that's well over, two-thirds of the crew are either dead or wounded. And, of course, they've got a gaping hole in the ship. by all rights, according to Ernie, the ship should have broken apart and sunk, but it didn't. It was miraculous that the torpedo hit one specific area. And why was that area of the ship so important, Ernie?
Because that was the area that the intercept was taking place, and all the area was sealed from the rest of the ship, so that with the torpedo opening up a hole in the side of the ship, the water was self-contained. Any other place on the ship, the bulkheads would have given way, and the ship would have broken apart. And as a matter of fact, if the torpedo had gone off about 2 foot aft, it would have opened a hole into the engine room, and the boilers would have exploded, and we would have the ship would have self-disintegrated.
It's almost like a miracle, a miraculous act that the ship didn't go down.
There are some of us who feel that way, and after 41 years of our government lying to the American public that they're taking the Israeli side, that it was a case of mistaken identity, and the crew who knows that it was a deliberate attack by the Israelis, I think we were spared for some reason by the Almighty to tell our story. I took an oath like all the other CTs, and we were all given a gag order that we could never speak about the Liberty incident to our families. And it's not something that I would take lightly. But over the years, things have happened to us, and this continuous denial of the U.S. government and essentially calling us liars, when on the other hand, the USS Liberty is the most decorated naval ship since World War II. that we should be held up as some sort of standard that we did what we everything that could possibly have been done to save as many lives as we could, and our captain, who got the Medal of Honor, to keep our ship going and functioning and maneuvering and to get out of the situation that we were in.
Well, now, of course, the ship now is very badly damaged. Are the engines still running? Are you still able to steer the ship?
Our engine men kept the ship going. As a matter of fact, when the captain realized that the ship was holding its own and that he had power, and we didn't have a helm, we had to steer move the rudder right at the where the shaft comes out of the water and mechanically, but we were still functioning. So the captain ordered the ship to leave the area and go to deeper water, because he felt that if the ship was going to sink, he wanted to make sure that the Israelis could not get their hands on any of the equipment any of the intercept equipment that we had on board. That was his thinking.
All right, fine. So he heads out then towards sea, and then of course, wasn't Cyprus fairly close by? And then they instead of letting you go to Cyprus, why they redirected you to go to Malta? What sort of madness is that?
That's a good question. Don't have the slightest idea.
No, because how far were you from Cyprus? How far were you from Malta? Do you have any idea?
There are big differences, but I just don't know the numbers. We sailed through the night. I mean, we didn't see any actual help from another Navy ship or plane.
In other words, you would have thought that they would have sent other ships at this point to help you, or in case the ship should have started to break apart to save human life. But you didn't have anybody from the Navy allowed to help you, did you?
Hold on.
We'll be right back. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ernie Gallo. He's telling us of the attack on the USS Liberty. And, of course, once the ship had broken contact with the torpedo boats, it starts moving into deeper water. The captain wants to go into Cyprus, of course, and they can still have power. They're moving slowly. The USS Navy, the U.S. Navy and Washington, D.C. knows what's happened. And no destroyers, no planes, nobody is sent to help the ship in case it should start to break apart and sink. And at that point, everybody on board would probably have drowned. So anyway, of course, then what happened? When did you first begin to find any other ship there to help you?
We finally rendezvoused with the USS Davies, a destroyer, the next morning at 5 o'clock. And then later on in the day, the America and the Sarah, I know the USS America came by, and they medevaced all of our wounded to the USS America, where they were all cared for. That occurred, I think it was 10 o'clock in the morning, up until that time, we had to fend for ourselves, and the U.S. Navy trains their people well. I'm trying to say here is that I'm alive today, thank God, because of the training that the damage control folks and our engine men and all those skills, the radio men, the electronic technicians. Our signalmen, everybody performed as they should have, and I wouldn't be here today. And our captain, with his professionalism, his demeanor, our feeling of confidence in him, that as long as our captain was there, we were going to get through this, and we did. When we rendezvoused with the Davies, we got additional medical help and damage control. And then, as I said later on, the helicopters start coming out from the America to take our wounded to the America. And we had some very seriously wounded folks, and they saved countless more lives. But I would like to just for a moment go back to
that. Hold that for just a moment, Ernie, because you want to bring our stations back on board, and it'll just be a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess is Ernie Gallo, and certainly talking about the attack, and certainly the captain did what was right. He wanted to, of course, sailed directly to Cyprus, of course, where he could get his wounded off board, get medical help for them, but he wasn't allowed to do that. He was ordered to go into Malta, which was much, much further away. Initially, no American ships or no American planes or no American rescue efforts were allowed to actually help the people on board the ship. And what time was it the following morning when you finally got help? Do you recall?
Yeah, we were 5 o'clock the next morning.
5 o'clock the next morning. And then, of course, helicopters come. They of course, lift a lot of the severely wounded off the ship and saved their lives. At least got them to places where they could be cared for. And, of course, the ship goes ahead and sails on into Malta. Go ahead with the story there, Ernie.
I'd like to pause for a moment and reflect back on the story about the jets. When I mentioned it, I didn't know until 20 years later. None of us knew until 20 years later what happened with the planes. Admiral Geis sat down with Commander Dave Lewis, who was our security group skipper, and Mr. Lewis was burnt pretty badly, as a matter of fact, I thought he would be blind for life, but that did not. I mean, he's fine now, and Admiral Geis told Dave that the things that he was about to tell him. He knew that a cover-up was going to occur next, and that he swore Mr. Lewis to secrecy until his deathbed. And Mr. Geis, or Admiral Geis, told Dave Lewis the story about the communications between the White House and the recall of the planes. And Dave Lewis maintained that secrecy until Admiral Geis's death, and then, as I said, 20 years later, we found out about him. What's so important, I mean, there's a lot of hidden thoughts behind that, or circumstances that brings to light the fact that the White House may have known that the Israelis were the perpetrators, and before the event happened, and why deny us the help if the jets had arrived on.
Talking about the American jets now, right?
The American jets off the Saratoga and the America. If they had arrived, they may have prevented the 25 that were killed from the torpedo blast.
Well, because the question then arises, really, why would the President of the United States and Secretary of Defense McNamara and certainly Admiral McCain, who was intimately involved in this, why would they betray the loyal American sailors and servicemen on the USS Liberty? That just doesn't make sense. Why would they do it? And yet we know they did.
Yeah, I wish I had an answer for that. More importantly, is why did the Israelis do it? Our distractors would say that it was a case of mistaken identity. They thought we were an Egyptian horse carrier. We looked nothing like the Egyptian ship they were talking of that they have sighted a number of times, and the fact that our flag wasn't flying, or they didn't see it. It defies logic. After we've logged 12 overflights that morning of reconnaissance aircraft, and if they didn't know who we were, they had to be blind or very stupid.
No, I don't think they were either one. But of course, they were just pilots doing exactly what they were told to do, just as American service people do what they're told to do and do not ask questions. And maybe they ought to ask questions. In fact, I have an article that says that the initial flight of Israeli planes that aimed at destroying the USS Liberty was headed by an Israeli officer who actually refused a direct order to attack, and he took his flight back. He was immediately arrested and sent to prison, but he refused to do it. The next flight went out, and they did carry out orders and kill the Americans. But at least some of the Israelis felt it was wrong, but that really didn't matter. They seemed to be working very closely with the people in Washington, D.C., and that raises the question of why. Well, anyway, because you eventually get into Malta, could you tell us how it was that the servicemen, the sailors aboard the U.S. Liberty, were ordered not ever to tell the truth about what happened and what the threat was that was made to the survivors of the attack if they should ever tell the truth?
When we went into dry dock to Malta, and we were very, very impressed that an admiral, two-star admiral, arrived along with four Navy captains, and the purpose of their visit to the ship was to convene a Navy Court of Inquiry. And they set about taking testimony from the crew that was left on the ship. And we all felt at that time that, you know, the Navy was doing their job, and they're looking to find the facts and the accuracy of the details. And our logbooks, would be a matter of court record. All of this was a sham, because the Navy Court of Inquiry we found out, was deliberately falsified by the White House, and so that it led credence to what the Israeli claim, that it was a case of mistaken identity, that it was not deliberate. But Captain Ward Boston told us in 2002 that Captain Ward Boston was the counsel for the Navy Court of Inquiry, that whatever report that they prepared was falsified later on, and the testimony, for instance, of Lieutenant Painter, that the Israeli machine gun or life rafts was dropped, so that all kinds of testimony was either removed or disregarded, so that the report would read that, you know, the flag was limp and the Israelis couldn't see it, and therefore would, you know, the stories could blend together. This Navy Court of Inquiry is important because this is the document that they still hang their hat on today. If you should ask for information about the Liberty, that's the information, that's the document that they'll point to as the official document, why the ship was attacked and the details of it.
In other words, it was all a lie, and because they threatened the people, the members of the crew, with what, imprisonment? Or what? How did they threaten you, you ever told the truth about what happened?
Either 10 years in prison or a $10,000 fine or worse.
Well, what do you mean by worse? And did they infer what might happen?
I don't know, but it sure kept us quiet.
And, so is it anybody, how long was it before anybody in the crew had the courage to come forward and tell the truth about what had happened?
Well, Jim Ennis, our division officer, he wrote a book. And it took him a number of years to research it and to gather the facts. And they didn't want him publishing the book, but they finally released it. The book is his research as to of the things that led up to the attack and the details of the attack as he knew them, as he discovered, and whatever documents that he was able to get from the Lyndon Johnson Library.
What did he actually get from the Lyndon Johnson Library? Was it the truth there? Did Lyndon Johnson ever reveal the truth? The fact that he ordered to withdraw the plane so that the men on board the ship would die?
No. That kind of information wouldn't be there. But there were some other interesting documents that he did get that helped us later on to put the puzzle together a little bit better. After his book was published, some of the crew then started to come together, and there were incidents that started to occur that didn't seem right. Okay, for instance, after the USS Liberty, I was assigned to Cheltenham Communications Station, just on the other side of Andrews Air Force Base, and I got an invitation to go to the captain to the captain getting his Medal of Honor, it was not at the White House as customary, as tradition. The medal was not given to him by President Johnson. The Medal of Honor was given to him by the Secretary of Navy in a low-level ceremony at the Washington Navy Yard. Medal citation did not indicate a word that the Israelis were the perpetrators of the attack. Some of the headstones in Arlington Cemetery, the same thing. In other words, that they were going to maintain that the attack was accidental. So much so that at Annapolis, there is a wall where if a graduate of Annapolis is killed in the line of duty, and his name would then be placed on that wall of honor. Our executive officer, Philip Armstrong, and Lieutenant Stephen Toff, names should have been placed on that wall. And they weren't initially because, once again, the Navy defined this as accidental. It took the intervention of Admiral Thomas Moore, four-star admiral, to correct that, and also to correct some of the things that were happening with, as I said, with the headstones. Their entire mindset of Washington was to ensure that the fact that the Israelis were the attackers was removed from history.
And of course, Admiral Thomas Moore was certainly one of the most esteemed four-star admirals in the United States Navy, and he actually tried to get the truth out about that, but of course he was never allowed to.
Absolutely, he's my inspiration. I got to know Admiral Moore, and he was a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for a period of time, 4 years, and that took a lot of guts and for him to stand up for us, because when you do that, especially at his level, you're immediately branded as anti-Semitic. And that's one of the things that we have watched over our 41 years of trying to get this truth out, that political correctness in this country is ruining it. And the other thing I really want to bring up that's important is that our Congress should have investigated the attack on the Liberty, and they never did. There is a law on the books where, and this goes back to piracy days, when the naval ship is attacked in peacetime, it is their responsibility to investigate the accident. And if you look back in history, every single naval ship that's been attacked, the Cole,
how about the Pueblo?
The Pueblo. Congress investigates. They have their own investigation, and they refuse to do that for the USS Liberty. And our distractors would say, oh yes, they did investigate, and it's a matter of record. If you go to the congressional records, you will not find an investigation about the Liberty.
Have you read the book, Operation Cyanide, which suggests that this was a plan to actually sink the USS Liberty, kill all the men on board, and then use that as a justification for an attack on Egypt? Do you think there's any truth to that?
For the longest time, I thought that was a possibility. But I don't any longer. I think the better reason why we were attacked might be because we were a threat to their war plans. The Israelis started the war on the 5th of June. They had immediately taken out the air forces of Syria, Egypt, and Jordan. So they had control of the air. They had taken the Sinai, right up to the Suez Canal. Things were going very well for them, okay? The Soviets were getting very nervous because Syria and Egypt were their clients. And if Israel made a move to go into Damascus or Cairo, the Soviets had paratroopers ready to fly in. So they were going to get into this war if President Johnson didn't watch his P's and Q's. And so President Johnson was trying to get the Israelis to come to the peace table. But as I say, it's now June 8th. They hadn't taken the Golan Heights yet in Syria. And they were moving their troops out of the Sinai and going towards Syria leaving the Sinai vulnerable to the Egyptians. They could have counterattacked if they had known that there was there weren't as many troops there. And the Liberty was intercepting their radio traffic. So I think it's more plausible to understand that we had to be silenced to ensure that they could continue their operation and take the Golan Heights. And President Johnson knew that they wanted the Golan Heights from the very beginning. And he was telling him not to, and the Russians were breathing down his neck, and they were about to get into the war.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Ernie Gallo talking about the sinking of the USS Liberty. One of the stories has been totally suppressed by the controlled media for 41 years. Go ahead, Ernie. We've got about 3 minutes for you to finish up the story.
Americans need to take back the halls of Congress, and it's not too late to have a congressional investigation of Liberty. One of the points I wanted to make about that is that the only time the crew was ever asked to testify under oath was at the Navy Court of Inquiry. So, I mean, we need to have a venue where we can tell the story under oath once again and have it an honest and objective investigation, and we'll live with the results. But as far as history is concerned right now, there will always be this controversy about the Liberty, and there shouldn't be a controversy. We're the most decorated ship in the Navy since World War II, and the Navy can't even name a new ship, USS Liberty, because the word Liberty in the halls of Pentagon is an issue that causes political concerns. And it's absolutely ridiculous that the Navy treats us the way they do. We had an opportunity to talk to the Navy Judge Advocate General, and one of the past Judge Advocate Generals, Admiral Merlin Starring. Asked him to reinvestigate the Liberty and provided him with all the details of why the Navy Court of Inquiry was lacking, even as an investigative document. And the current Navy Judge Advocate General told him, you realize that what you're asking for, it would be considered anti-Semitic. The crew of the USS Liberty desperately needs justice.
And they do, and they need to find out who it was in the Israeli government and who it was in the American government who are responsible for what happened, because if the American planes had gone, the torpedo boats might never have attacked. So who or why, and that is the question that is going to have to be answered. But we're out of time, Ernie. I would like to get you onto some of our other programs, and we'll be calling you off the air. Thank you for everything you've done for our country and for keeping the memory of the USS Liberty alive. It's a story that must be told over and over again till the truth finally comes out and the American people learn the true source of the betrayal. God bless. Good night.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Ernie Gallo. We're going to put together a 4-tape set on the USS Liberty. There's nothing like it out there, and you need to understand, Chris, what this was about. And it was certainly, there are wicked people in the Israeli government, and there are wicked people in our own government, including Lyndon Baines Johnson, who is probably one of the most evil of all the evil people we've ever had in the White House. And suddenly he called those planes back because he wanted the boys on the U.S. Liberty all to die. And that is what other people have quoted him as saying. There's somebody who heard the conversation was told by the man who heard the conversation. Johnson said, I want that ship on the bottom of the Mediterranean. and Bruce really wanted them to die. Why was this? Well, I personally believe they wanted an excuse to attack Egypt and had the ship sunk. Why, they would have had an attack. They could have blamed it on the Egyptians. No one would have known. But the ship didn't, and I believe God intervened and has kept these men, now many of them, for 20 or more years. We're so frightened they would not come forward. Just as many of the people, I'm sure, who were involved in what happened on September 11th are afraid to come forward and tell the truth. Because if you told the truth, they would kill you. And quite frankly, this is the way the system works. And we've had people on my program who've been killed. And one of them was Gary Webb, who'd written about the CIA and drugs. And, of course, the idea the CIA is involved in the drug trade, well, what a horrible thing to say. So Gary actually committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make sure that he was dead. This, I mean, we've lost other people who are feigned suicide. You need to understand that if you heard my interviews with John Perkins, who wrote the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that he actually witnessed how they killed world leaders who wouldn't go along with the agenda of the invisible government. What's this all about? Or involved in a spiritual war, and there are powerful, evil spiritual forces that are energizing the leaders of many of the nations in the world. And that's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to hear my talk on the forbidden secret and get the syllabus that goes with that. You need to get my talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that, because it will take you into the occult forces that are out there. I just got an email today from a woman who went to a meeting of the Illuminists up in Canada in August of this year, a four-day meeting, and she talks about how there was representatives of Sanat Kamara there. Sanat, S-A-N-A-T, it's an anagram for Satan. And if you doubt there are people who worship Satan in key positions, go up on the Internet and Google in the word Gnostic, and you'll find out that the Gnostics really believe that Satan is God. How could you possibly conceal that from the Christians in America? Why, very simply, they control many of the Christian seminaries, and they turn out ministers with a superficial knowledge, but never a true understanding of the fact we're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political, military, ideological, cultural, economic, financial battlefield, but it's still a spiritual battlefield, and there really are millions of people in the world who worship Lucifer today, and some of them are at the highest levels of the spiritual hierarchy working in our government. And if you would like one of their pamphlets, not what I've read, but what one of their pamphlets, why, if you get any of our items, you could ask for a copy of the Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy. Will send it to you. They published it. I didn't, but they said to distribute it. I'm distributing it. The Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy, that tell you that they have their people planted in both the East and the West at every level of government, including finance. And that, of course, takes us into what we're going to be talking about in the next hour. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please remember that we're having an all-day conference here in the Monterey Bay area on the 26th of October, and we hope you can come. We're bringing in some great speakers, including Joanna Michelson, who was a medium, who was involved in contacting the other dimension, the spiritual beings there. So send me a telephone number again, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to come to our conference, we'd love to see you. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Thank you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Ron Brown. And, of course, Ron Brown supports Radio Liberty, and we support Ron. We think he does a great job for our listeners. And we've had many, many calls and emails and responses from our listeners who've worked with him and are very, very happy. And certainly, we've been talking with Ron for a number of years now about the cataclysmic financial times that lie ahead. Well, I know the cataclysmic financial times don't lie ahead. We are already moving into them over this last weekend. As you know, Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, one of the five largest investment banks in the United States. Merrill Lynch, one of the five largest investment banks in the United States, has actually sold itself to Bank of America to keep from going bankrupt. AIG, the largest insurer in the United States, is facing the possibility of bankruptcy if it can't borrow $40 billion in the next few days. Banks all across America are insolvent. Hardly a weekend goes by when another bank doesn't go down. And despite the fact that the apologists for the new conservative movement and for the people who control our government are saying, everything's fine, nothing to worry about. Every time Henry Paulson makes the statement, there's nothing to worry about, that's when you should start to begin to worry, because Henry Paulson gave up a $40 million a year job with Goldman Sachs to take a job that paid him $180,000 a year. Do you really think that he did that out of altruism or patriotism? Goldman Sachs, of course, is making money hand over fist. And while the other investment banks are going down, Goldman Sachs is prospering. I wonder why. Because they're shorting gold. They're shorting silver. They're violating the law. They're manipulating the commodity markets. But they're an important part of this whole elitist team. And, of course, it uses the Working Group on Financial Markets. The Working Group on Financial Markets. I want you to go up on the Internet and Google in Working Group on Financial Markets, also known as the Plunge Protection Team, that is manipulating our commodity markets and manipulating our stock markets, is violating the law right and left. But you see, what they're doing is perfectly legal because, of course, they are the law of the land. And they are authorized under legislation during the Reagan administration. And, of course, they're doing exactly what they're supposed to. They're manipulating our markets. And do you ever wonder why the market goes up when you think it would go down? Why the market goes down when you think it would go up? Why the price of gold and silver has plunged here? And simply because Goldman Sachs, from which Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, came, is manipulating the gold and silver commodity markets. Good evening, Ron Brown. How are you?
Always a pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan.
Well, you bring us up to date with what's going on. Anything exciting happened today?
They plunged silver today again, down 58 cents. It's up in the aftermarket, but it's just more of what you're talking about. The one you failed to mention, though, is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, of course, which is, $7 trillion that the government's having to take responsibility of.
$1 trillion here, $1 trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real worthless money, isn't it?
Well, people like ourselves and conservatives and hard money economists have been warning us for years about the derivative crisis that was coming up, the overloaded debt structure that was becoming unsustainable. I think it was Warren Buffett, have quoted many times as saying that derivatives are weapons of mass destruction, and what we're now seeing is that someone pricked the balloon, and all of a sudden all these leveraged companies and products are just when you prick a blown-up balloon, it doesn't let the air out slowly, and that's what's happening now. You're just seeing a massive deleveraging.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Okay, Ron, you were just saying you were seeing a massive deleveraging of this financial balloon that they've created. Go right ahead.
Well, for just one small example, there was a big hedge fund, the third largest in the nation, maybe the world, was called Osprey, and they were invested in many different types of commodities, and probably a lot of gold shares. In fact, one gold share that was involved with. And it was an $8 billion fund, and they made a bad leverage bet on the drop of the dollar, and of course they manipulated the dollar up, and they lost $2.8 billion in just a matter of days or weeks, and they just came out and said they were going to close the fund. Well, when you close the fund, that means they had to unload all their investments of that other $5.2 billion. So they started just selling stocks and commodities, which, and I'm sure that's just one tiny variable in this equation where you have all these highly leveraged companies having to cover and just sell whatever it takes to cover their losses. And that's what's, of course, fed into the Lehman Brothers and the Bear Stearns, of course, with the was the first one to go with all their mortgage-backed securities that were becoming worthless, and so the whole thing is just feeding on itself now.
And Bruce, a lot of these big companies, Countrywide's having lots of financial problems. They had to borrow a lot of money, sell a large part of their stock, of course, to various Arab countries. But even then, they're still having financial problems. And the question is, are the big ones, J.P., Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, are they going to be able to remember their five largest banks, of course, who included J.P. Morgan, Morgan Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase, and then Morgan Stanley, and Bank of America, Lehman, and Merrill Lynch, and now the five have become three. Are they going to be able to stand up under the pressures that are coming down the line? How many more of our banks are going to fail? Because, of course, they are not solvent, and they're not solvent because they bought a lot of securities that are rapidly losing value. And of course, they bought asset-backed securities. They bought certainly the collateralized debt obligations. They bought this alphabet suit of different investments called SIVs, and many of them are worth maybe 50, 40, 30, 20% of their face value. And these are the assets that back the bank, and banks are having real problems. They're trying to borrow from other banks that don't trust them. Banks don't want to lend to one another, and we're facing a worldwide financial collapse. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and Ron is just talking about, of course, the fact that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been taken over by the U.S. government, that now is responsible for their obligations somewhere around, well, some people say seven, some people say $6 trillion in debt, which maybe $1 or $2 trillion of that is going to be bad debt. And where's that $1 to $2 trillion going to come from? The American public is on the hook for all of these bad debts, increasing numbers of bad debts, increasing number of financial institutions going down, increasing number of hedge funds closing down, increasing number of derivative contracts coming due. And of course, the people who've written those insurance policies, the derivative contracts, don't have any money. And the whole world financial system is teetering on collapse. And it's not just here. The Chinese stock market's down 50%. House prices are falling in China. House prices are falling in Spain and England. And go right ahead, Ron.
Well, the way I'd have to try to characterize this is kind of like the showdown at OK Corral, where you've got massive forces of deflation going head-on against the massive forces of inflation. Of course, the deflation forces are the laws of economics that are trying to collapse this ridiculous debt structure that has been overbloated for 10, 20 years, and they just keep putting off the day of reckoning with more and more leverage and more bailouts and more funny money. So right now you'd have to say that the deflationary forces have the momentum going in their direction. It's collapsing this whole system. Now the challenge will be is can the bankers around the world, the central bankers, come up with a way to create enough money quick enough to offset what's being destroyed, because as I've described it many times over the past 3-4 years, this debt structure is a massive Ponzi scheme in that if everything is based on debt, you may have to keep the system growing, because if it ever starts to deflate, then people start to fail, and that's, of course, exactly what we're seeing, as the subprime loans started failing, and that triggered into the CDOs and the Bear Stearns, and it just kept feeding throughout the whole system, and now it's like a snowball running down the hill, and it's hard to stop it.
And I really think, of course, the average individual, most people think, oh, it's going to be a little tough for a while, and then it's going to get better, but it's got a long way to go. People are saying that the housing market's going to be down for 2 years, maybe 5 years, maybe longer. At least it's many people are saying 2 to 5 years. Today, a billionaire was quoted up there, some fellow is pretty smart on economics, saying he thinks at least 1,000 banks are going to go down here in the United States within the next year or so. These are frightening things because, of course, an awful lot of people have an awful lot of money in the banks, and, of course, it's backed up by the FDIC. The trouble is that the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Company, doesn't have enough money, of course, to pay off all these depositors who are going to face losing their money. In other words, the FDIC, if it runs out of money, it's got to go to the Fed. But the Fed doesn't have the money either. They had about $60 billion. They've used up at least half of it trying to rescue Bear Stearns and the others. And so the only thing to do is just turn on the printing presses and start turning out money like they're doing in Zimbabwe today.
That's where we're headed, Dr. Stan. It's either going to be hyperinflation, because the more money they print, the more the money they have to print. And if they don't print the money, I think we saw what happens if they don't print the money when they just came out and announced they were going to let Lehman Brothers go under. Very quickly, that started to feed throughout the whole system. Then you saw AIG. Now you're talking about Washington Mutual and UBS about ready to go under. I did read tonight that they came in very quietly, and Morgan Chase loaned Lehman Brothers $87 billion to keep the financial market from going into a shock, and that the New York Fed is reimbursing Morgan Chase. So it sounds like they're trying to help bail out. They're seeing what happens if you don't inflate. You know, as Richard Russell used to describe it for years, is we've reached the point where it's either inflate or die. And that's basically where we are. If they don't just run the printing press to bail out everything that fails, the whole system just goes into a black hole very, very quickly, and that's very frightening.
Well, now, is UBS in real trouble? Because UBS is the third largest bank in the whole world. That's United Bank of Switzerland for our listeners.
I was reading something today that said they may be the next to go to the Fed for a handout.
Well, wait a minute. They're a Swiss bank. They're not an American bank. Is the Fed going to begin to finance all the banks of the whole world that are getting into trouble?
Well, you know, they have a lot of interest in this country. That's the biggest brokerage firm in the U.S. So I was just repeating what Jim Sinclair was saying in his afternoon commentary, that he thought WaMu and
UBS are both on the rocks, huh?
Well, their stock has gone from 76. It hit 14 today. I think it rebounded a little bit to 15, but that's one hellacious drop in just a matter of months, you know.
You're talking about UBS, United Bank of Switzerland?
Uh-huh.
And, of course, people have to understand that this is the third largest bank in the whole wide world. And, of course, the holdings are several $1 trillion. But those holdings are rapidly disappearing. And just, you know, they'd lost $40 billion. They were looking at another $70 billion. And this was some months ago, that another $70 billion on top of the $40 billion they'd already lost. And, of course, people are pulling their money out of the UBS. And as people pull their money out because they just don't want to take a chance on losing it. And, of course, they're being told, well, there's nothing to worry about. This is the third largest bank in the world. But the third largest bank in the world is beginning to look at the possibility of insolvency. I don't think that the average individual really grasps the significance of what's going on out there today. Do you, Ron, the implications of this as far as the stability of our economic system?
Well, I agree totally. And I think it's simply because for the last 30, 40, even 50 years maybe, every time – we got on the precipice of some type of crisis, the Fed or the government would come back in and bail it out and put off the day of reckoning. And so people have gotten used to the Fed where they won't let it happen to us, and they'll always, someone will come in and save the day. And we've gotten so used to that, we're totally vulnerable to the fact that you can't put off the day of reckoning forever. As I've said many times, even the greatest magician eventually runs out of rabbits, and I think that's what we're approaching. The sad thing to me, though, is the very people who have created this crisis, they've done it with a motive, and unfortunately they plan to take advantage of the crisis to further their own agenda, and that, of course, is towards their one world banking system, their North American Union, and so forth. So it really is frustrating to see the same people, the very people that caused the crisis, to take advantage of it.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there across America and you got a question for Ron, why, give us a call, because, of course, I think that Ron's right on the cutting edge of what's going on. Now, my understanding is that suddenly you're having a hard time getting both gold and silver to sell. Is that true?
More so with silver than gold. Basically, every form of silver that you can think of is backordered so hopelessly that myself, and I'm sure a lot of other dealers like me, are afraid to even take an order because, you know, I don't want to be responsible for holding someone's money in my bank, waiting 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks for something to be delivered when all the banks are in jeopardy. So I'm sure if that were to be the case, everyone would look and say, well, it's your responsibility. I sent my money to you. So a lot of dealers are just refusing to take orders now. And
now, what about bags of what we call junk silver, 90% silver? Are they available? Are bags of 40% silver available?
40% is probably available. You know, most people complain about silver being too heavy, so when you go to 40% bags, you're just doubling the problem, you know, of weight and storage. Bags are spotty, but I've been able to get a few of them. I've sold like 8 bags or so in the last 2 days, but that's, you know, that's just a drop in the bucket for compared to the demand that's out there.
Well, now, what about, certainly, as far as what is a bag, what's the premium on a bag of silver?
Right now, they're going at about $1.30 an ounce. So it's...
That's really not bad. So you're talking,
but it's not bad at all. You know, if you were trying to buy silver eagles today, you would probably have to pay a minimum of $16 to get them. So you're talking, 30%, 40%, 50% premium on them. And of course, if you go to eBay, they're asking $20 or so. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, it's hard to imagine. The laws of supply and demand have just been totally, at least on the short term, defied. It's kind of like picking up a golf ball and dropping it, expecting it to fall. Instead, it goes up. Well, if there's no silver out there in the world, and it's running dry everywhere around the world, then how can the price of silver keep dropping? And the simple answer is there's so many leveraged players in paper silver that that's where how they're driving the price down.
But if anybody actually, of course, got in the commodity market and started buying and demanding a delivery, why, there would be no silver there to deliver, would there?
I suspect that is going to be the final showdown, because whenever one market gets out of touch with the other, there's always something called arbitrage that comes into place. And that's where, if you're a refiner or a dealer working in silver, or gold, I guess, but silver is what we're talking about now, and you're out of silver to sell, then why not go into the futures market, buy a nearby contract, 5,000 ounces, take delivery, because a futures contract is an option to ask for delivery. So I suspect that's either going to happen, and what I'm trying to find out from some people I know and is that is there some type of triage going where the authorities are making it very difficult for investors to take silver off the futures market because...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Okay, go right ahead there. And incidentally, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 1-800-646-4829-5. Go right ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I was just saying that there's probably, my guess, some sort of triage going where the monetary authorities controlling the COMEX and the futures markets are trying to make it very difficult for just speculators and investors to take silver off the market, trying to preserve that silver for the many corporations that have to have silver to survive. You know, silver goes into thousands and thousands of products around the in industry, and if you don't have the silver, then you're out of business. So I suspect there's some funny business going on there, because otherwise it would only make sense that people would be just running to the trough to take delivery of all those commodity contracts, and there's only about 40 million ounces on the COMEX. I haven't gotten exact figures in the last several months, but it's very limited in supply compared to the demand that's overwhelming the market now.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Ed, who's calling us from Idaho. Hi, Ed. Where? What part of Idaho are you from?
Coeur d'Alene area.
Okay, Coeur d'Alene. Good to hear you hearing us then on the American Christian Network. And do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I have a question, and that is, what is face value on silver now?
What's the face value on silver? Do you want, what is? You say you knocked it down, what, to about $10.50 today?
The spot price of silver was $10.50. The bags were going for about $8,500, which comes up to $11. I don't have a calculator on me, but somewhere approaching $12, I think. Let me do that real quick. $8,500 divided by you, $720. $11.80 an ounce. So if silver was at $10.50, and you're paying $11.80 an ounce for the coin silver, that's about $1.30. Premium, which I was quoting earlier.
Okay, fine. So basically, of course, the premium is not as bad on the bags of silver as would be on the silver eagles.
But the face value on the coins is what, 10 times, are you saying? 10 and a half times?
Well, if you're paying $8,500, you'd be paying 8.5 times face.
8.5, okay.
A silver bag, just, you might write this down. Just say silver bag equals $1,000 face value of pre-1965 DQH for dimes, quarters, and halves.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath that, just put, if you were to take that 10,000 dimes, which is what it would take to make up $1,000, right, and melted it down and refined it into pure silver ingots, you would have approximately 720 ounces of pure silver.
And which are the 40%, which are the 90%, Ron?
That's the 90% I'm talking about. 40%, I think, has $295 face value per $1,000 face value.
And the 40% coins are indicated how?
Those would be the half dollars from 1965 through 69, I believe.
I see.
And then at that point, of course, they took the silver completely out of our currency and left us with a totally fiat currency. Okay, anything else, Ed?
That's it.
Okay, thanks very much for calling. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-295. And right now, we're going to go to Terry, who's calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
This is Jerry.
Who is it?
Jerry.
Okay, Jerry, go ahead.
I was wondering, when do you think the financial collapse is going to happen?
Hold that thought for just a moment. And right now, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, we have Jerry on the line with us from Los Angeles. And our guest, of course, is Ron Brown. We're talking about the financial collapse, which I believe is underway at the present time. But the question comes from Jerry is, when is the financial collapse going to occur? Well, our telephone number, if you'd like to call us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Jerry is asking, when is the financial collapse going to occur? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's triggered now, as I tried to describe earlier. Now the ball is in the court of the central banks to see if they can print the money fast enough to bail out the system and keep it from going into a deflationary implosion.
But, of course, if they do that, why, they leave us open to an inflationary explosion, don't they?
Yeah, in fact, I would, if I had to guess, that's the way they would go. because if they had to print $1 trillion today, that's what they'll do, because they can't let it deflation. They're already seeing what happens when deflation gets the momentum. So they're going to have to step up very, very quickly, as they already have, as I mentioned earlier, with the Lehman Brothers thing. They first said they're not going to bail them out, and then all of a sudden, according to what I've read, they've given them $87 billion. I would call that something kind of a bailout, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I sure would. Jerry, anything else? I think the financial collapse is already underway.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when is it really going to, like, hurt us, the average person?
It's hurting a lot of people right now, Jerry. An awful lot of people are losing their jobs. An awful lot of people certainly are losing the value of their life savings. An awful lot of people, you know, you're beginning to feel the impact. Maybe you haven't as yet, but I think there are a lot of people out there who are very, very worried. We see this in our own receipts. We run a little mail order business, so we can actually keep on the air, pay our bills, and we've noticed a drastic drop in our orders from what they were to what they are today. So this, I think that people are already beginning to hurt. Maybe you're not, and I'm glad you're not, but I think an awful lot of people are concerned. Any other question?
Let me add to that, Dr. Stan. There's an awful lot of people that are earning a salary and making ends meet month to month. What they may or may not know is that their pension plan, pension plans are invested in the AIGs and the Merrill Lynch's and the UBS's and the Ford Motor Companies and the GMs of the world, and they're all collapsing 60, 70, 80, 90% in value. And so you've got to wonder how many of these pension plans are so ungodly underfunded that they'll never be able to meet their obligations to the people who are expecting some type of retirement.
And, of course, I think the second other thing is, of course, a lot of people have insurance. But with inflation, the million-dollar policy that you took out, 25 years ago, which, of course, was a great deal of money, $1 million is not today what it was 20 years ago, because inflation has eroded it. And so I think we're all going to be impacted, and we're being impacted on this today. Anything else? I guess we lost Jerry. So let's give our telephone number out once again. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. The 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you haven't, of course, had been impacted yet, you're very, very fortunate. But, you know, a lot of people, contractors, you know, people aren't putting out a lot of money for jobs at the present time. And, of course, they're going to start cutting their prices. They're going to have to cut the prices to get the work to do. And certainly some prices are not going up, but an awful lot of prices are going down. If you noticing what's going on at the old major retailers, they're all having sales. They're selling things, just to raise money. A lot of our major retail outlets are having real problems. So you pick up this story, Ron, because you're much closer to this than I am. First of all, what sort of response are you getting from your customers? Are your customers anxious to buy gold and silver at the low prices, or certainly are they skeptical about doing anything now because they feel that they've lost a lot of money?
It's amazing, Dr. Stan. Since they started this ambush on the gold and silver markets and the oil market, too, I'm sure, back in March 17th, I guess, is when it triggered. That's been, 6 months now? I can honestly say I could count on one hand, and I'm not even sure. I don't think I've had one person call in a panic to sell their gold and silver. I've had a few people that are having to sell to make ends meet because, at one client, for example, his father was going into a nursing home, so he was going to have to sell off some gold and silver to pay that. But the only people that have been selling are the ones that are in some type of financial bind. Everything else is people are calling, saying, what's going on? Is it time to buy? So, everyone's wanting to step in and buy. So, in that sense, the manipulation of this market is backfiring on the monetary authorities, in that anyone that sees the silver price...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Ron Brown. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Ron Brown. And Sydney, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you can always give us a call. And, of course, but anyway, Ron, you were saying that certainly nobody is really panicking to sell other than they have to sell sometimes just to meet current expenses. Is that right?
Sure. A lot of people, of course, are getting squeezed. They've lost their job or, you know, other variables come up. Or they've been, you know, the prices have been going up for gasoline and everything. So they're getting squeezed and they have to go back to the well and then sell some gold and silver or whatever to make ends meet. But, of course, that's what it was for in the first place, is an insurance policy. It's just you hate to see people having to sell it at the very early stages of the game.
And, of course, you hate to see them sell it right now when the price is so far below what it was here just a few months ago.
Yeah, and the whole thing defies logic. You know, here is the price of silver has been smashed from $21 to as low as a little over $10. And yet you can call all around the country and there's not a dealer in the country that really has any silver to sell. It's just back-ordered. Just to give you one idea, I was reading something today. A fellow over in Dubai was talking about, I'll just read it. Silver, I am reliably informed, has been snapped up over the past few weeks to the tune of several thousand tons in India, compared with less than 60 tons bought in the rest of the year to date. In other words, up to 2 weeks ago, India had bought less than 60 tons of silver, and yet in 2 weeks they bought 2,000 tons. So that tells you there's a scramble out of paper assets, not just the dollar, it's all paper money, into something that's tangible and real. And that's why all the gold and silver has dried up. And it's being covered up temporarily because of the deleveraging and the ambush in the futures market. I think we mentioned, well, we haven't mentioned it today, but two banks in 1 month sold 140 million ounces of paper silver into the futures market to force the price down, and that just flushed the other players out of the game. But in the process, what it did was prick the inflationary bubble, and that's what triggered this whole deflationary downdraft that we're seeing. It's threatening to take the whole system out of control.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens if some large buyer goes into the commodity markets and starts buying their contracts and then asks for delivery. We'll be right back with Ron Brown. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Ron Brown. And before we go on, I want to mention our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Ron, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and your organization. And as I mentioned earlier, Ron Brown does support Radio Liberty, and we support him because we think he does a great job. But go right ahead, John. Ron.
Okay, my company is North American Investment Services, and you can reach me by calling 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. If they call you, do you send them any information? Do you have any treatises on what's going on that you offer to people?
Yeah, I've written several things, and I'll put a package together and send it to them free of charge. And I just encourage people to call me because, you know, a lot of people have never reach this point where, I mean, we're trained not to think in terms of gold and silver, hard money. We're all trained to accept the dollar as it is. And so most people, even the ones that went through college and economics, haven't studied anything about monetary theory, and they just kind of accept the dollar as is. And the simple fact is all fiat money systems eventually fail, and this one is in the process of failing. So unless people wake up to that fact and start taking steps to protect themselves, they're going to lose everything because all paper assets are getting wiped out.
And, of course, this is true. And, of course, we see, of course, the explosion in the price of homes. I remember, of course, the home I was raised in cost $3,000 back in the 1930s, and I bet that house is worth about $100,000 today. But what you're seeing is about a 30% increase, a 30-fold increase in the value of many homes. But it really means, of course, not that the house has gone up in value, but the dollar of the value of the dollar and of money has gone down. And this is what people really don't understand, is that inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. Inflation represents the increase in the supply of money. And it is the increase in the supply of money that drives up the prices of the things you drop by in the grocery store. And, of course, of the price of homes and so many other items. People must understand that inflation destroys the value of our currency. And as Gerson Leonard said, there's no better way to destroy a nation than to debauch its currency. And not one person in a million will know what's going on. And, of course, that's true. Most people do not understand that the Federal Reserve System was created not to give stability to our currency, but to destroy it, and they're in the process of destroying it today in the name of trying to maintain the stability of our society, which they've been undermining for almost 100 years, going back to the creation of the Federal Reserve System in 1913, which was, of course, 95 years ago. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Ron Brown, and we're talking about what is happening financially. Well, certainly, Ron, the price of cars has come down nicely. In fact, my understanding is that most of the automotive manufacturers are losing money on almost every car they sell. Is that really true?
That's what I hear. I think last time I was on the air with you, you were talking about, was it a Ford F-150 you could buy for $10,000 or something?
I think it was about $11,000. There was a pickup truck, and I just couldn't believe it. There was a $6,000 rebate, and then another $6,000 rebate. And this really, of course, the cars are down at the present time, but what people don't understand is the price of iron has gone up 85% within the last several months. And if that holds, why, of course, the kind of prices of cars will be up next year. Well, let's go to Marion, who's calling us from Sacramento. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Marion. How are you doing?
Well, hi, Dr. Stan. Thank you so much.
You're going to have to speak a little louder, please.
Well, I've listened to you. I'm listening to Ron, and both of you have a head start on me, but I'm doing my best to catch. And I was wondering when we really, now that we started to collapse a little bit here, what are the Illuminati, do you think, planning to do as far as the people who do have gold, silver, and so forth? I have heard that.
Oh, you're breaking up there. Marion, you're breaking up. Are you on a regular phone or a cell phone?
Oh, take it away from us.
Oh, okay. Marion, you're breaking. Your voice is breaking up. But we have the question. Let's give it to Ron and see what.
Computer phone. I'll call back on the cell phone.
All right, if you would, please, that'll be much better.
All right,
fine. But certainly, let's approach Marion's question. Ron, of course, what do you think that the elite, and Marion refers to them as the Illuminati, what do you think the Illuminati is going to do about the people who have gold and silver? Certainly, they're not a majority of our population, are they today?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, maybe 2-3%, maybe 4% at the most, I guess. Yeah, that's a question I often get answered, and what I simply say is if we lose our nation, if we allow the elitists to take control, do away with our Constitution, merge us into this North American Union, which is just the next step in their global society, then we will have lost that government of law that restrains the power of tyrants. And at that point, the gold and silver may do us no good. They may just come in and say, turn in your gold or silver or else. And you know, it's scary to think that we could live under such tyranny, but when you see what's going on behind the scenes and the plans and the plots of what they're doing, then you start to realize how evil these people can be.
All right, let's see if we can get Marion back again. What's it again? Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Marion, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, that's so much better. Go ahead.
Well, I caught part of that, but that was what goes through my mind as I've been playing catch-up, listening to you and Bob Chapman and Ron and so forth the last few months, and so I've been buying and putting my house in order, and then those thoughts are going through my mind. Well, all of this is said and done, but we have chaos in the streets. If I'm out trying to trade with the coins or even food, I was kind of wondering what the two of you thought about what you thought maybe the Illuminati were planning, because I know that they're concerned about chaos and they have military in mind to keep us in line. It goes through my mind.
All right, fine. Did you hear Marion's remarks, Fraud? She's worried about what's going to happen when we have chaos in the streets.
Well, and, you know, that's what I was kind of addressing. If we lose our country and this rule of law that has provided the greatest prosperity and freedom in the history of the world, then yes, that chaos is very possible. The gold and silver will probably end up doing you very little. But all we can do is the best we can right now to become part of the solution and not the problem, and hopefully spread the word, as you're trying to do, Dr. Stan, and have been doing so valiantly for years, is to wake up the people to what's coming down. And so our hope is that there would be a great revival of people waking up to fight for their country.
And I think, Marion, you have to realize, of course, that there is no absolute security. Certainly what you've done as far as gold and silver is important. You should have a means of purifying water, so you'll have water to drink. You should have water stored. You should have food stored. You should have health products stored. But, of course, we can make all of our preparations, and the best laid plans of mice and men oftentimes go astray. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, and make sure you're in the right shape of the Lord, and then, although there's reason to be concerned, in the final analysis, you're going to have to trust in Him, which I do every day, because, of course, I'm very outspoken in exposing the demonic forces that exist in our society. And if I worried about the consequences, I couldn't do what I do. I have to put my faith in the Lord, and I hope you are able to do that as well. So plan as if it's up to you, and pray as if it's up to the Lord.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I've been listening to you, and that thought was uppermost in my mind when I started to listen to you, and I thought, why are you even still around? and yes, I'm so blessed to be saved. And that's, I realize more and more and more we're not in control. And the bottom line is we have our faith in the Lord, and no matter how it turns out, we'll be with the Lord. So thank you. Since I was listening to both of you, I know that you've both been doing this a lot longer than I have. Thank you so much.
God bless. And please get those people up there in Sacramento listening to our program, will you? Please try.
Do
the best you can. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. All right, that was Marion calling from Sacramento. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 464-8295, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who, of course, are wondering what to do. And of course, I think you diversify. You diversify as much as you can. Some people are not in a position to diversify. Some people aren't even in a position to buy gold and silver. And of course, what they buy, what they can, get in some, at least some food stores and other things, so that when you get into a chaotic situation, you're not going to have to go out of your house. Who knows what the people have in mind? If you can get into or in a position to move to an area that is less congested than places like Sacramento or Seattle or Los Angeles or San Francisco, why, you'd be far better off. But some people can't do it. So you try to look ahead, do what you can, and then, of course, put your faith in the Lord. Well, because as you talk to people every day, Ron, What are the people telling you about what's going on? How do they feel about it? Do they realize, of course, that the elitists are in the process of destroying the foundations of our monetary system and debauching our currency?
Well, you know, part of my process whenever people come to me looking for gold and silver is to start the educational process. I'd say probably 30-40%. I'm already pretty much aware of what's going on, and they're always looking for more knowledge. But, yeah, that's part of my educational process. If you don't understand the times we live in and what's going on in the monetary system, then you're helpless to do anything to protect yourself from it. So it's more of an education than as a salesman. You know, people, once they understand what's happening to the monetary system, then it's very logical what they need to try to do. And it's more than, as you say, more than just buying gold and silver. You have to prepare for some type of chaotic event. You know, you need the food storage. And I always tell people, buy some extra knee pads, because in the bottom line, the only thing that's going to give you peace is your faith in the Lord. And so that's where we're actually heading. And but as you seek the truth, then the truth will set you free, and that will lead you to prepare and become more spiritually strong. Because when you try to prepare for it, it's just like this lady was explaining, you realize there's nothing you can do to totally prepare for it. So it makes you dig deeper into your faith, is my belief and hope, that it'll draw people closer to the Lord as they try to prepare in their own understanding, and you can't really do it.
Well, I agree with you totally, and that's really what the main purpose of our ministry is to bring the people into a personal relationship with the Lord. But when you have an affluent society, when people have everything, or almost everything that anybody could desire, why, most people don't feel that they need the Lord. It's only when they suddenly realize that what they have is in jeopardy, when they begin to realize the organized evil that we're up against, they begin looking for an explanation. And hopefully you and I will lead them in that direction. And if we do nothing else but turn people back to the Lord, at least those people, a few people who listen to us, then it's all been worthwhile. And of course, as you know, I do not get paid at all for what I do. I do this as a labor of love, as it were. And thanks, my wife stands behind me. And we are able to reach people all across America, you know, through the miracle of radio and of shortwave and the internet and satellite, and then of course the written word, and of course the articles we have up on the internet, as well as our internet radio programs. And so what a privilege I think it is at times like this to suddenly realize, of course, that people are listening, and hopefully some of their lives are changing. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment for Ron Brown. It's certainly, as we see, of course, the government taking over Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and now absorbing the massive debts of these companies, which have been acting totally irresponsibly. And many people think that there may be a loss of up to $2 trillion. Well, I hope that's as far as it's going to go, because the potential for $6 trillion at least, perhaps even more. But certainly many people anticipate $1 or $2 trillion loss. I mean, how much money can you afford to lose? And then, of course, you've got to immediately try to print that money. As you print the money, you have to value the value of everything people are holding. Do you think most people really grasp the implications of the inflationary spiral we've undertaken, Ron?
No, I really don't. Not yet. You know, even the people I talk with and the gold bugs, you know, that are buying it to protect themselves. You know, a lot of us, like yourself and myself, have been doing this thing for, 30 years? You've probably been doing it a lot longer than me. And it seems like they always put off the day of reckoning. So you're never quite ready for that day of reckoning to hit here, because you think they will always put it off. So there's a lot of people now saying, well, you know, they've done this for 30 years. They can do it for another 30 years. And of course, at some point, it does come to an end, and that's when... And the reason I know it comes to an end is because the people that are plotting and planning have an agenda, and their agenda is to build their new world order on the ashes of the old, is their slogan. So I think people are seeing it happen, but they're in denial. They don't really think it can be. Otherwise, there would be panic right now.
Well, I think that all we can do is explain to people what's going on, and certainly we do our programs. We try to give them examples. We try to name what's going on. We try to give people references to the articles that are written by people on the other side, working for the Council on Foreign Relations, that talk about the need for a global currency backed by gold and privately issued. In other words, issued by private people, a gold-backed currency, a monetary system that will have some inherent value. And what that means is we're going to have to destroy the value of the dollar. And only, of course, when we have destroyed the value of the dollar and many of the other currencies throughout the world, will people be willing to look towards a global currency. And yet that's what the people who work for the Council on Foreign Relations are talking about. A privately issued gold-backed currency, a new currency for the world. But then, of course, you can't have a world government unless you have a global currency. You can't have sovereign nations out there with sovereign currencies. So I think they're in the process, intentionally and maliciously and purposely, of destroying the value of our currency and impoverishing our people. Our guest is Ron Brown. One more time, Ron, want to get your telephone number out?
1-800-595-0561.
All right, very good. Well, we got 3 minutes for you to wrap up tonight's program, Ron.
Well, you know, we've been sharing everything that's happening with Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae, and Lehman Brothers and AIG. But in reality, that is, people out in California would certainly understand, that's the first shock of an earthquake. What's going to really, and we're starting to see now, is the aftershocks that come in, because when any of these main entities go down, they're going to feed crisis to many other different companies as their defaults start to affect them. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how the inflators can print money fast enough. They're going to have to do it by the trillions of dollars. You're going to see them pumping money to everyone just to keep the thing going. So the dollar is about to be destroyed one way or the other, and I would just urge people, if they haven't woken up to what's going on yet, time to wake up and start doing your homework to figure out the way to protect yourself from what's coming down, because it's coming fast, and the day of reckoning, I'm afraid, is at the doorstep right now, and it's not going to be something they'll put off for our grandchildren or later.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's so vitally important that people begin to study what's going on, because, of course, if they do not and they're impoverished, they will be totally susceptible to the forces that are going to be working to take away our freedom. Some people are going to survive what's coming down the line. People, I believe, are going to survive, are those people who make the preparations at the present time. If they can relocate, they will. If they can't relocate, they will at least understand what's happening monetarily and spiritually, and they will begin making the preparations both fiscally and financially and spiritually for the very, very difficult times that lie ahead. But do not put it off, because we are in the throes of the crisis that Ron and I have been talking about, I don't know how long, I suppose pretty close to, what, 8 years or so, or maybe longer?
Something like that. Seems like we started back right around year 2000, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Well, that's about 8 years. And, of course, we've been talking every month about what's going on. And of course, Ron's on the front lines. He's talking to people about this. And we're on the front lines talking over the radio, trying to get people to realize that nothing that's happening today is happening by accident. I do not believe that the people in charge have lost control. I think they know exactly what they're doing, and their job, their intent, maliciously, is to destroy the value of the currency of the American people, impoverish the American people, and take us into the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Monetary System, the New World Leader. Good night. God bless.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We hope that you enjoyed our interview with Ron Brown this evening. And, of course, it's always a pleasure having him on. Cindy, if you want to know more about what's happening financially, my talk on the financial tsunami, given several years ago but still very apropos, especially the syllabus goes with us, that explains to you all the various terms that they use designed to confuse you. But, of course, the derivatives, the hedge funds, the carry trade, all of these things are playing a part in this complex monetary system we have, which is designed to be complex so you won't understand it. But it's really very simple. They're destroying the value of your life savings in an effort to impoverish you and control you. And when you understand that, it's really very, very simple. There are powerful spiritual forces out there, powerful financial forces, but many of those financial forces are controlled by spiritual forces. If you doubt that, let me suggest a pamphlet that's put out by the people on the other side, the Lucis Trust, which used to be called the Lucifer Publishing House, but this is a Luciferian organization funded by some of the most wealthy people in the world. And they're a little pamphlet called The Working of the Spiritual Hierarchy. If you get any of the items that we offer, why, you can just ask for a free copy. We'll send it along to you. And they know exactly what they're doing. They will tell you there is a spiritual hierarchy, which, of course, are demonic beings out there that are really running the things behind the world, the scenes. And so you're welcome. You get one of their pamphlets. And then, of course, we hope many of you want to get the little pamphlets we've put together called the History of Money and the Financial Meltdown. They're just compilations of our newsletters. We hope that you'll want to get the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. It's out of print, but if you order it now, you'll get a copy as soon as they come in. They will be in very, very soon. The book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. It is a conspiracy. The Federal Reserve System was actually created at a conspiratorial meeting at Jekyll Island back in the, back I think 1910, where Senator Nelson Aldridge and Paul Warburg and representatives of J.P. Morgan, the other major banking houses, got together to figure out how they were going to be able to take over the monetary system and control our nation. And, of course, what came out of that was the Federal Reserve System, which, of course, is a privately owned central bank owned by bankers to enrich bankers to impoverish the people. That's why the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, is so important. That's why the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, is so important. That's why the book, Fiat Money, Inflation in France, which was written over 100 years ago by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the dean of one of the major universities in the East. Andrew Dickinson White, of course, wrote a story of what happened in France in 1789. And when you analyze what happened in France in 1789, it's like deja vu all over again. Well, anyway, of course, we hope you'll want to get this information. My telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And then to understand the financial implications, you need, of course, to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or watch the CD, Brotherhood of Darkness. And I've been told by many people that it's really changed their whole lives. And then, of course, my talk on the forbidden secret. That's the forbidden secret, and there's a syllabus that goes with that. And then, of course, my talk on the planned police state. And there's a syllabus that goes with that. If you want to understand how it was that Fidel Castro came to power, why, of course, you have to understand he was brought to power by the American State Department and the CIA that knew he was a communist. And how can I make that statement? Well, you get our DVD, The World Revolution. You'll hear my interview with Ambassador Earl T. Smith. Nobody else has anything like it, where he tells you how the United States State Department and CIA brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing full well he was a member of the Communist Party and had been for many years. And then, of course, we hope that you will go to our website, radioliberty.com, watch our DVDs, listen to our programs, read our letters and the other essays, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.